The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Vox Markets Podcast. Today is Friday, the 31st of May. I'm Anita Riota and I'm filling in today for Justin. Today on the podcast, we have Rob Proctor, CEO of Audio Boom, ticker BOOM, Extract Resources, ticker XTR, Executive Chairman Colin Bird, and finally, CEO of Vast Resources, ticker VAST, Andrew Prelia.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Audio Boom, Rob Proctor. Rob, thanks for joining me.
Morning, Justin.
Yeah, and you've had your 13-month sort of results out for the period ended the 31st of December 2018. Of course, it's an historical document now, but it's good to look back in it, look at the highlights there. So we'll dig into that. But as always, Rob, if someone's brand new to investing, listen to the podcast for the first time, and let's say they've never heard of Audio Boom, could you explain, summarise, what you do, please?
Yeah, we're an end-to-end audio platform and services company. So you can, you know, create, upload, store, and then distribute your podcast off of our platform. And we then can either help you or just do all of the monetization across that product. So we work with independent podcasters all the way through to, you know, large companies, you know, such as A&E Networks and who else should we talk about? People like News Corp, all of those kind of guys. So we run the full gamut, but anybody literally can upload, store, and syndicate that content to the likes of iTunes and Google Play. And we've got API direct access into the back of Spotify and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, like I said, you know, it's we're getting into 6 months now, 5 months of 2019, so we are 5 months behind here, but it's always good to look back and see where you've been, and we'll talk about where you're going hopefully in a bit. But take us through some of the sort of financial highlights of 2018, if you could, Rob.
Well, to kind of highlight that lowlight, I mean, I would like to draw the line in the sand today, this being the last time we even ever mention the word Triton in the same breath as Audio Boom. But, you know, that obviously happened through 2018, despite the Triton debacle, which probably cost us around $4.5 to $5 million. We did 11.7 million last year. That's up from $6 million the year before. You know, stabilized all of the cost structures within the company. The one good thing coming out of Triton was it really forced us to focus on the core of the business. Mm-hmm. You know, we did a lot of technology. We did a lot of kind of extraneous distribution deals in order to, you know, get the content out there as widely as possible. But I guess what 2018 was for us as a sea change was that focus. So we make content. And we sell advertising. That's what we do. Simple as that. It's audio content, but we make it, and we sell advertising off the top of it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so, and as far as cash flow now and where you are, you've announced you've sort of been cash flow neutral for quite a few months. Is that still the case?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, we won't get H1 results out for 19, which is clearly what we're focused on now, running through to the end of June. But in terms of just pure cash flow, I mean, we have had several announcements now, probably for two or three quarters on the spin, where we've been pretty cash flow neutral. That continues to be the case. Obviously, our revenues are growing, and, you know, H1 is looking, you know, orders of magnitude better than H1 of 2018, and you know, it's going to be comparable probably to the whole of 2018, just in H1 19. And as we know, in, you know, if you look at the results there in 2018, you know, our revenues from H1 to H2 are probably 2.5 times higher. You know, if we follow that same trend here, that all points to a pretty amazing 2019 for Audio Boom.
Yeah, and have you got an eye on being cash flow positive this year, or when's that coming?
We are. I mean, the thing with the, if you like, month-on-month cash flow for us is we're obviously, we're in a massively growth industry. We are, you know, even with Triton last year, we grew by 92%. The industry as a whole grew by 38%, which is still amazing, but we pretty much, you know, outperformed it by 300%. That model is driven by paying either upfront payments, which are fully recoupable, or paying minimum guarantees, which are fully recoupable, to established tier one podcasters, where we know what the audience is, we know what the sell-through rate is, we know what the CPM is, so we can predict what the revenue is. That's a massive driver of this business, because it not only builds revenue very quickly, but also builds audience. All of those new podcasts come with their own listeners, which are then on the Audio Boom platform. We're going to be touching 100 million monthly active unique users. So when we make more of our own content, or we do more co-productions like with Formula One or with Woodcut Media or World Media Rights or any of those kind of companies, it means we have a bigger audience to advertise those to, so they grow quicker. And I guess the key for me on that cash flow piece is, if we want to keep driving forward and keep driving that top line revenue, then we need to acquire more tier one podcasts. So that has a short-term immediate hit on month-to-month cash flow, because we're putting that money out there as an upfront, but recouping it over the life of the contract. Previously, those contracts would have been a year, so actually recouped relatively quickly, but then you'd have to renew the contract. More typically now, our average contract length is 18 to 24 months. We're signing some contracts at 3 to 5 years. So again, long-term for the business, that's better. It just takes longer to recoup the upfront payment, because you obviously spread that out evenly month on month over the life of the contract. So some short-term cash flow hit, but overall, top-line revenue and therefore profitability of the business is driving forward for the long term.
Yeah. And as far as podcasting go as an industry, I mean, it's been hot for a while. It's still hot. There's still people coming into the space. I mean, you've got like Spotify coming in, of course. Does that make it easier or harder for you? Is it the competition here?
I think the industry is just getting hotter all the time. I mean, obviously, Spotify doing what they're doing on M&A is one thing. But obviously, Spotify putting a real marker in the sand going, we're all about podcasting now as well, is huge for our industry. I mean, 9 months ago, Spotify accounted for 0% of our listens. They now account for nearly 11% of our listens. And that's a brand new 11% into the company. So that's not being cannibalized, say, from iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher or off of our own product. So that's obviously fueling the industry in a certain way. You're seeing new companies like Luminary. They just come in and raised $100 million off plan. They have no product, no platform, no nothing, $100 million. Himalaya just raised $100 million as well, coming in, no product in the US, no nothing. So yeah, that's all building the industry, and a lot of that money is going to talent. So there's more new talent coming into the industry. Which is obviously bringing new audiences and new listeners, so that's driving that forward. But you're right, it does, you know, with more money becomes more competition. Mm-hmm. I think where we have a huge advantage, and, you know, we partner with Spotify, we work with Luminary, we work with Midroll, but we still compete against them as well. And I think one of the advantages that we have as a pure play podcast company is that 100 million users. So when we're looking at a mid-tier podcast or even tier one podcast that are looking to grow their audience, they know we've got 100 million listeners that we can organically market their show into, and therefore we can drive their growth. That allied to the fact that our monthly or our average CPM is probably about 20% higher than the industry average CPM, means that our sales guys out of London and New York are doing a tremendous job. And obviously the podcasters recognize that as well. So, yeah, not only are they building audience, they're actually monetizing at a higher rate than pretty much any other company out there can do. But I guess the third area where where we can compete against the likes of Luminary or even a Spotify is with talent. So if talent wants to, for the first time, create a podcast, as we know, podcasts are delivered by the RSS feed to whatever player you listen to. Essentially, that audience built on that RSS feed for that podcast belongs to the podcaster. So if they take a lucrative exclusive deal with Spotify for a season, yeah, you know, they might get paid a couple of million dollars for doing that. But at the end of the season, they walk away from that and they don't have an audience. They don't own that audience. It's not their RSS feed. It's on the Spotify platform. Mm-hmm. They come and work with us if they have ambitions and aspirations to be a podcaster for the long term. Building that RSS feed via Audioboom means they are building their own audience that they can put any material they want out to for the next, you know, year, 5 years, 10 years. So there are lots of natural advantages. We do have more competitors. It's making the market more competitive. But I think within that, we have lots of natural advantages that have been built up over the last, you know, 8-9 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what's your ambition here, Rob, with the Audioboom?
Well, we've just done the fundraise. I think allied to that, and it's alluded to in the announcements or what have you, we're putting in place an SPV as well. But we scaled back the fundraise, partly through internal, partly through external forces and people releasing information into the market against MAR rules that they shouldn't have done because it was confidential. Because of that, we elected to take $4 million on the fundraise, and $4 million is going into an SPV that we can write guarantees out of. Obviously, with the SPV, it's non-dilutive to the company and the shareholders because it's a facility, effectively. But all round, we ended up with an $8 million fundraise, which is effective, you know, in terms of buying power, which is what we were aiming at, but on a better set of terms for our shareholders. That money is going to allow us through 2019, and obviously whatever we acquire through 2019 in terms of talent will be with us through 2020. So we have, you know, we have a very clear focus. So let's drive the top line revenue through tier one established podcasts. But most importantly, let's really focus in on expanding our co-production work with the likes of A&E Networks and Formula One. And, you know, we have a whole bunch to announce, you know, over the next few months that are coming on board, where we're going to be making podcasts in conjunction with some very large publishing brands that bring audience, that bring content, just not in audio. That business is better margin, typically 40-45% margin on that business, so it will help our overall gross margin. And we're also focusing on Audioboom Originals. So I think we have a slate of another 12 to 14 shows to launch before Christmas. You might see a couple of season twos and season threes from the likes of Covert and Mafia will launch through the summer because they've got an established audience. All of the other new shows won't be being released probably until the beginning of September. Not worth releasing new shows into the summer months. People are away, their routine has changed and what have you. So rather keep our powder dry. But what it does mean is that strategy is going to give us a ton of inventory through Q4, and hence why, you know, we would normally look to see, you know, a 200% increase in H2 from H1, but we know we've got the inventory to back that up.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, Rob, one final thing to do then. If someone's listening, likes the sound of the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, I mean, we are the only UK-listed podcast company. If you are somebody that invests in listed or quoted stock and you want to get exposure to what's probably the fastest-growing digital sector around the world right now, Audioboom is your option. We spent, you know, 6-7 years building what we have today, building our audiences. The media agencies of the brands are now fully turned on to the impact of podcasting in a media and marketing sense, hence the growth in our revenues, which is, you know, they're parallel within the industry. And I guess lastly, you know, we have been through what we went through in 2018 with Triton and, you know, the need to focus in on our core, making content, selling advertising, but also controlling costs. So, you know, our headcount has gone down over the last 18 months while our revenues have, you know, doubled and doubled again. Hopefully it will double again this year. All with a much more concentrated and focused cost base. So, you know, we're in a good position to take advantage of all the hard yards we've put in for the last few years.
Marvellous stuff, Rod. Good chat to you. And hopefully we'll be catching up again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
All right. Perfect. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me here today is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources, ticker XTR. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Just to start, for those who don't know the company, could you give us a quick summary of Extract Resources?
Well, Extract Resources is listed on the AIM market. Its key asset is the Manica Gold District. I guess it's a district play in Mozambique. Of late, we've acquired some interesting exploration ground in two levels. One, I guess you could describe as brownfields, and the other a little earlier on in life, greenfields. So we're a copper gold company, a major asset in Manica, Mozambique, and new exploration projects for copper gold in Zambia.
And I want to ask you about the Manica agreement. Why did you decide to go this financing route?
Well, you know, markets have been as difficult as I've ever seen them. And we don't live in the best of times for raising money and the style of raising money. And this project is going to need 10 to 12 million, possibly a little more. Imagine having to serve that at a 14% interest. Imagine having to give away a royalty stream for the privilege of developing the project. Imagine the debt equity ratios that your equity requirements would be more than your current market cap. When I looked at the alluvials, you know, the company didn't enjoy the best of times, and I took over the reins in August 2017. I was determined not to put the shareholders to any more risk, and I've taken the same route with the Ard Rock project. You will see that the obligation is on the other side to build the plant, build the CIL plant, make the modifications necessary for the gravity circuit, finance the mining, be it either directly with purchase of their own equipment or alternatively stand the cost of the contractor cost. And we only suffer the direct operating cost, which one would expect in our division of cash. We don't have to find the capital. So really, it's a good deal. And of course, we keep the project and we've got input into the daily running, into the way things are done, and the security of the gold, and the security of the tailing dams, and satisfy all of our obligations under Mozambique mining law, safety law, fiscal management law, employment law. So at the end of the day, you know, it's a 23% net profits interest, not including including depreciation. It's quite a good end deal.
And given all these above facts, what does the earnings look like? What do the earnings look like at Manica for the company?
Well, as you know, I'm not allowed to make forward looking statements like that, but if you look at the economics, I mean, you know, I think we say in the press release that the minimum tonnage is 29,000 tons a month. The nameplate tonnage is 40,000 tons a month. So it's anywhere between 20 and 29 and 40. It's in the public domain that the recovery is 85 to 90%. And the gold grade in our DFS was 2.63, so we certainly should be getting above 2.2 grams of gold. So really, you know, that you don't have to be a mining analyst to know that 23% of that could be extremely profitable to the company on a monthly and annual basis. Of course, I've always said that I think at this scale, we should be able to come out with direct operating costs of not much more than $500 an ounce.
So good terms, the grades are there, operating costs are better than imagined. What is Extract Resources doing in Zambia at the moment? Exploration permits?
Yeah, we announced that we got those two exploration permits on the IOCG, iron oxide, copper gold. As I've said before in these discussions and various RNSs, that we're looking for the Olympic Dam type mineralization. As I said in the preamble to this discussion, that we've got one project which is a fairly early stage. We've done our early geochem there and got quite pleasing results and found good positive trends. And that's the Matrix project. And now we've done our magnetics and we're going to redo them. It was a little noisy and we're going to redo them. The other project, the Eureka project, where a couple of three visitations, we're sure that really we understand the project, we think, but what we're doing is looking at lots of different information and we're digitizing it all on the same database. And we're imprinting it all on the same database. And I'm delighted to say that it's drill ready. So once we've done this desk work, we will have identified best shot three or four areas. And I'm rather hoping that we get the success that we're looking for, and we'll have identified the major trends at Eureka. There's been some good intersections there, if my memory serves me right, 20, 25 metres long, 2-3 grams of copper and a couple of grams of gold. So, significant drill intersections in the past of copper gold. So if we start repeating those, then, of course, the board and our shareholders will be quite pleased with themselves.
And I'm curious as to your outlook on base metals. You mentioned the RNS, your outlook. Could you just expand on that?
Yeah, well, I'm very well known to be a raging bull on certainly the fortune for copper. We're quite good on zinc. Obviously, the electric vehicle metals, EV metals. Nickel seems as though it's going to have a real good run. I think the car makers and everybody is a little bit apprehensive about how the supplies of cobalt will be in the future. So fundamentally, copper, I think, and I've had some history in copper and some success in copper and some success in Zambia, for that matter, in copper. But, the chartists, all of them, the forecasters, very, very, very unusual in my career to see them all agreeing. And that agreement amounts to double the amount of copper being required by 2030. Now, in a discussion like we're having now, that sounds an awful long time away. But when you consider that we live in a time now when big is beautiful, and it takes from sort of initial exploration through discovery to feasibility, financing, commencing, you've got a good 8 years gone. So that, it's round the corner and it is 2030. And the expectations of the majors for higher copper prices didn't come true. And that's generally because of the antics of Mr. Trump, I think, where he's actually made an uneasy world. And, of course, the trade wars and the sanctions and God only knows what else has led to a little bit of unease. And the copper price staying, I wouldn't call it depressed, at 6,002, but, staying lower than people expected. So the reality is a lot of projects, the development projects, have been shelved. And the world and the industry is going to regret it, because those companies, your big mining companies, the chief executives and chairman are going to be asked 2 or 3 years from now, well, your earnings are quite good, but are they sustainable? Are they quality? And of course, unless your inventory of copper for 20, 30, 40, 50 isn't firmly established, you've got a profit graph which is showing an up, and you've got an inventory graph which is showing down. So the earnings aren't sustainable. The earnings aren't quality. So that's why I've gone on the copper hunt again, looking for big properties copper properties in a country where copper's been found before. It's nearly up to 1 million tons now in Zambia a year. It really is a significant player. I'd sooner be in Zambia than other parts of the world. And so from that perspective, the commodities I'm very bullish about, and I'm particularly bullish about Zambia and its prospects in that space.
Well, investors usually forget about the fact that after financing all the steps you outlined, it's after all just around the corner. And so it's the timing seems to be right. Just for investors, three reasons to follow XTR.
Well, that news release is the first reason, you know, where you've got 23% of net profits, if you like, in net cash flow, without having to invest a cent. The copper projects in a new territory to a more immediate mission, when I say more immediate, 2-3 year mission. And the price is extremely cheap, and the market cap obviously reflects the share price. So good time to enter the company with good prospects on the one hand, gold cash flow, and on the other hand, good potential work for copper gold discovery. I think the company's well placed and should be one that existing shareholders should be quite content they've got, and would-be shareholders should certainly be on their radar screen. And when you look around the markets to what the competition is, it should certainly be on their radar screen as a target for investment.
Great. Well, Colin, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much for giving me the time. Thank you.
Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Pelayer, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources. VAST is the ticker there. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin.
We haven't spoken for a while, but you've just raised $900,000 before costs, and we'll get into why and what that's going to be used for in a bit. But as always, Andrew, if someone's listening right now, I've never heard of the company, could you just summarise what you're about, please?
Well, Vast Resources is a multinational or multi-jurisdictional and multi-commodity mining company. We have operations in Romania and Zimbabwe. Recently, we've cleaned up our balance sheet and divested in some of our gold assets in Zimbabwe to allow the balance sheet to look a lot healthier, to attract institutional lenders. We will back in operation, potentially have, you know, 2 to 3 mines running by the end of this year, so, or even sooner. So we're quite advanced, we're highly undervalued, and we've got a lot of upside potential for any new shareholders.
Yeah,
absolutely. And current shareholders, of course.
Yeah. So, okay, take us through. So the subscription to raise $900,000, just take us through what this is going to be used for then, Andrew.
Well, predominantly the money is being used for getting Bayitsi into operation. We've been waiting quite a long time for different types of funding possibilities to get Bayitsi into production, our polymetallic mine in Romania.
Yeah.
We had a second tranche of funding coming from an off-taker. We went back to the market where we had other off-takers willing to step in. However, due to, let's say, intercompany policies to take out one off-taker for another one, we had to change our tack, which happened around February, March this year. We've been talking to bank and proper institutional lenders ever since. We've already got a term sheet from one Swiss bank and some other institutions as well. And they're going through the normal course of due diligence process. Unfortunately, these are timelines that we can't enforce because it's a fairly small ticket for a fairly large asset. And these institutions are normally looking at lending a lot more money. So the less money you need to borrow, the longer it takes. But it is in process, and we're confident that we will close that out. So we did this as an interim stopgap to make sure that we don't have any long lead time wait post funding. And there are two particular items that can take up to 6 months. And rather than run into winter at the end of this year, we wanted to make sure these two processes were in place, which is the secondary electricity line. One's already been installed, which you need to continue dewatering and run the flotation plant. And the other one was the tailings pipe, which we need to upgrade for environmental issues reasons. We can't use the old one because it's rusted and old. It's been sitting for about 7 years without care. And so we're basically making sure that once that funding comes through, we can get in and start operations very quickly. So the clock has actually started on the 6 months that we've set it to take into production, but the clock starts today.
Yeah, so let's go through some bits of that. So first of all, you said that the funding from the Swiss bank, you're quite confident that's going ahead and it's looking good at the moment, is that right?
At the moment it's looking good. I mean, we're dealing with institutions, they have different criteria. We've had no indication that it won't be proceeding. However, we have also engaged Carlingford, who are debt funding specialists, to assist, because there's not a lot of bandwidth within the banks as far as doing the due diligence. This will assist us progressing the approval periods by getting a third party independent engaged to assist the banks in finalising their due diligence. But that wasn't the only reason for Carlingford. I can talk to that a little bit later. They're also assisting us in conjunction with the SRK reports we've commissioned as well. So, and also, as a result of engaging Carlingford, it's also opening up other opportunities to other debt providers, because we don't want to be in the position again where something doesn't happen and we're not prepared. It's a precautionary measure. We've been caught out before, and we never want to be in that position again. So that was the reason for engaging Carlingford.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned there, you know, getting BP into production there. So is there a way of putting a timeline on this, knowing when it'll happen?
We've always said, I mean, because of these two long lead items was always the reason why we said 6 months. In hindsight, we should have done it a lot sooner, because all the other startup procedures to get Bates into production can be done in anywhere from, you know, 10 to 12 weeks. So there's already 3 months to get the rest of it in operation. I mean, we've taken the people, because we're on care and maintenance in Manaila, a lot of the people have moved to Baita. There's a lot of preparation work going on, both in the flotation and in the underground. So that's all quite advanced and it's not a long lead time. So the two things that were always that trigger for 6 months to get into production were these two long lead items. A long lead for implementation, not so much for acquisition.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have any updates on the diamonds there? What's going on there?
You know, the problem with the diamonds is we are, again, you know, beholden to institutions, being a government. But what we can say is that we are literally in daily contact with the authorities. We are still extremely confident, and we hope to deliver the positive news shortly. And we already have a term sheet for the funding of the diamonds, and we're expecting more during the course of this week and next week. So as far as the long-term debt funding is concerned for the diamonds and for the Romanian operations, we're confident, but we need to continue and keep the business going. And the reason for this placing was to make sure that we can accelerate the start dates. It's a short-term pain. It's been very difficult for me and very difficult for the team to make the decision. But, you know, sometimes these difficult decisions just have to be made.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, one final thing to do, Andrew, if someone's listening, not following the story, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please?
Well, that one's an easy one. Look, we are, as I said, a multi-jurisdictional, multi-commodity mining company. We have in our possession what most junior miners look for. We have, I can't give you the value right now, but once these reports are published, you'll understand that, you know, the valuation of our assets are between 10 and 20 times our current market cap. The market cap is unfortunately at an all-time low, and now with the funding in place, the commencement to production is now started. It's now an opportune time for any investor who wants to diversify their risk for copper, lead, gold, silver, lead and diamonds in our portfolio. And we believe that we are, you know, creating something magnificent for our shareholders, and we look forward to delivering.
Excellent stuff. Andrew, thanks for that. And hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And now here are today's top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets platform. At number five, we have Golden Saint Technologies, ticker GST. At number four, Integumen, ticker SKIN. At number three, we have Big Dish, ticker DISH. At number two, Bold Opportunities, ticker BOU. And at number one, we have Nuformix, ticker NFX. And here are today's top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets platform. At number five, we have Metal Tiger's audited results for 2018. Number four, Totally's proposed acquisition of Greenbrook Healthcare. At number three, i3 Energy's final results for 2018. At number two, ARC Minerals' new board appointment. And at number one, United Oil and Gas appointed a new CFO.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.